Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Dr. Grant Gardner, ag economist with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, Vicki.
Well, hello, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing the best. It's been a good day. Got a lot of stuff done. Been productive.
Me too. I feel like, well, you're like me. We've been out of the office so much with trainings and meetings and things like that that's kept us out of the office that things get to be behind that we've got to eventually get caught up.
I had about 5 tasks over the past 2 weeks that did not get done. And I got them all done today between 9:30 this morning and about 2 this afternoon.
Yeah, it sounds like my day. I went in early and because I thought I've got to get some things knocked off the list. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself today, Jay. I feel like I was productive.
Got a big day tomorrow with a meeting we've been working on and planning for a while. And our sidekick, David, is not with us. He is in Lexington at the time being, getting ready for the state volunteer forum, 4-H volunteer forum. I guess just volunteer forum. It's not really a 4-H thing, but a lot of 4-H agents involved, a lot of 4-H leaders involved, and some FCS leaders and volunteers too. So
I'm certain he's really excited and living his best life.
I'm certain we'll hear about it for even talking about this. It'll be a surprise. He'll hear it when we actually, you know, when he's driving down the road listening to the show.
And we'll get a text message.
Oh, it'll be worth it.
Yeah, he was there bright and early this morning because we had a meeting this morning, an executive committee meeting with KACAA, and he was in the lobby of the hotel. And so he was there. He was in Lexington bright and early this morning.
I think he was leaving out about 5 from home, so he probably got there good and early.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Got a guest with us today, Dr. Grant Gardner. How you doing, sir?
Good. Happy to be here. Made the drive over from Lexington, so opposite of David.
Yeah, y'all may have met on the road.
A little bit later in the day. I didn't leave that early, but
we're glad to have you here with us. Grant's going to be a speaker on our program, actually, tomorrow that we're doing, part of our Tri-County Grain Series that we've done for the past 3 years. And had to come the night before, so he agreed to show up a little early and sit down and do a show with us. And we greatly appreciate that.
Yes, we do. We always appreciate the everybody that's a guest for us. Jay, we've really had, everybody seems to really work with us any time that we've ever asked folks to be a guest with us. Most of them just have been very helpful, and we've been able to work things out and schedule it and get it done. And you are a retread, so once you've been on more than once, we call you a retread. So we're glad to have you. And you had a beautiful day to travel, weather-wise.
I would have rather been outside.
Yes, I agree.
I think it's consensus for all of us. We got a lot done inside despite the nice weather outside.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of those odd days in February that it's mid-60s and the sun was shining. So,
well, Grant, you've been here over a year now with us and had a chance this spring to get out and probably do a lot of county meetings and talk to a lot of folks. What are some of the things that are hot topics on people's minds right now? I know everybody wants to know about an outlook for grain crops for Kentucky and the economic outlook. And what may be some of the other, we'll talk about that in a minute, but what might be some of the other issues that some folks are talking about?
I mean, I've stayed more focused on that grain side. And so I just get a lot of comments on, right now I answered a couple questions today on ARC PLC signups, on the risk management side, and then also looking at, okay, so if crops are falling, how do we continue our operation? Because we're going back from probably $14 soybeans and $6 corn to something closer to $11 soybeans and $4 corn. And so what does that look like for us moving forward, and how long are we going to have to weather the storm before we see an increase in these prices again? That's really what I've focused on quite a bit. Got some other projects going on, working with Kentucky Corn a little bit to make basis information more readily available. Looking forward to diving into that more after meeting season's ended. So that's a good project that I think is going to be beneficial to the state as a whole, and I'm excited to get started on that.
Well, you mentioned meeting season, and we all know what that means, but to our listeners, when we talk, when extension agents talk about meeting season, particularly in ag, we have to get a lot of meetings in, really now between January and the 1st of March. We have a scattered few in December, but January really takes off, and you've probably traveled this whole state several times, I bet, Grant.
I have. I've spent over, I think my Hilton Honors account says I've spent 22 nights in a hotel. So
yeah, it's probably since the first of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a daunting task, I'm sure, for specialists, especially for you having to cover the whole state. But it's because of folks like you, though, that we can actually – we're helping our producers because it's that information that they need, and it speaks of you too, because you've been if you've had 22 nights, that means you've had a lot of requests and had people's wanting you to come, and producers are wanting to hear what you have to say. And so I think that's pretty good for to just have a year under your belt now. So
yeah, and if it helped one person, it was all worth it.
That's right.
Absolutely. And this goes the same way for our agronomy type specialist as well. Time was when we talked about grain crops in Kentucky, we pretty much focused on the western third of the state, really the western fourth almost. But, you know, especially in the past 10 years, we saw a lot of pasture land get converted, a lot of hay land get converted. And we have pretty good sized row crop operators all the way up to I-75 now, you know, north to south, especially in and around that Lexington area where you are. So means a really, the bottom line means a lot more area to cover when you're in your travels.
Yep, and there was one week I drove all the way out here, drove basically back to Paris, and then I drove back out here the same week. And I'm going to work better next year on trying to schedule some things closer together so that doesn't happen. But
well, and that's a learning curve, though. I mean, I think that, you know, anytime any of us start a new job, there's those learning curves that you learn that you don't know you needed to know until something like that happens. And you know, I think that's something that we've tried to do with Tri-County since we've been doing programs together, is with that mindset of, you know, we know that you specialists are covering a lot of ground in a short amount of time. A lot of requests on you, and not you're doing meetings, but you're also continuing your research that you're doing. You're also teaching classes. You may have grad students. It's not like that's all you have to do is go do grower meetings. And so we have tried to, with the Tri-County group, is to be able to pull multiple counties together and get specialists to come in like we're going to do tomorrow at our grain day. And that way it helps you as a specialist where you've got multiple counties in one trip, as opposed to having to maybe do that back and forth.
And
as
I
much.
Think every specialist appreciates that.
Yeah, yeah, it seems to be, and it's good for us too, because you kind of share the duties too. I mean, when you're planning an event, tomorrow, you know, Jay took care of nearly all of that because it's in his county and he made the contacts. And, you know, last week we had our tobacco meeting and it was in my county. And so I pretty much
did all that.
Yeah, I take care of that. Our poultry groups usually, or it's in McLean, and David takes most of that. And it really works out well. So yeah.
David's bringing the donuts tomorrow, right?
I'm bringing the donuts tomorrow. Do you have a request? What kind do you like?
I like a good old normal glazed donut.
Me too.
Well, yeah. we've got a place here in Madisonville makes some pretty good ones.
Oh, I think
you'll like them.
Yes, I will have them here.
I'll say this too, for that agent that you made the trip back across the state for, they won't forget that. They will remember it and they'll appreciate it just as much as anybody would. So.
Yeah.
So what are we looking like? Grain crop outlook, it's 2024. By the time this airs, it'll be April. So we're in March right now, and probably one of the biggest things we can look at is the past, what's led us up to this point and what may have created some of the issues that we're going to be looking at in the grain market for the next year.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is that we were at near record high prices during COVID. And then those prices were propped up again with everything that happened with Russia, Ukraine. I mean, everything kind of followed wheat up at that point. And so we were really at artificially high grain prices. And I mean, that was great. It led to 2 years of high prices. And probably, if you're looking throughout the entire nation, two of the most profitable farming years we've probably ever had. That being said, we can't stay up there forever. And so now we're on the back end of that and prices are coming down. And really at this point, it's really uncharted because I don't know where we're going to stop. If you're looking at information that came out this week, February is when we get our first outlook for, or at least projections for 24-25. And you actually see that the marketing year average price USDA is projecting is actually going to be lower next year than what it is this year. And so what that means is I think we've still got further to go. And I believe those numbers, don't quote me on this, but I think it was 440 for corn and somewhere around 1120 for soybeans. And so I think that's about where we're headed. And I don't think anything's going to change by April when this airs within the next year and a half to 2 years. It'd be a year and a half in marketing years. Mm-hmm. I think that's about where we're going to end up. And so we've got to take a good hard look at our operation and figure out, okay, we did have some years where we put money back into the operation. Now we've got to kind of sustain, lower some costs, and continue how to mm-hmm. operate with less margin.
And that's hard. I mean, because we all are guilty of you kind of get used to spending what you bring in, or, you know, hopefully you're not spending 100%, but you do get used to living that certain way. And whether that's in farming or somebody like us that work for somebody else, that's a difficult thing to do when you have to scale back. And then I think about, too, some of these younger farmers that have come on in the last, say, 2, 3, 4 years, this is going to be the first really trying time that they may have experienced, you know, from a financial standpoint. You know, it's – and so – I mean, what are some things that you can, I guess, maybe some recommendation or things to consider going into this to change that mindset of or preparing their mindset for this change moving forward?
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit. I mean, I think it's when you start to see, you know, larger profits roll in, it's really easy to have what I'd call lifestyle inflation in your life. And I just went through that as I left graduate school and I'm in my first real job where I'm making good money and my spending went up a lot.
Yeah.
And probably too much at a time. And I think that's something that everyone deals with, especially if you're a producer who has, you know, 2 or 3 years that are great and then we're going to go back down. How do we curtail what we were spending before? It's something that's really difficult.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I agree, and I can see that too with like that same scenario with my daughter. She graduated college and her first job, and it is hard. I mean, it's hard the first time that you actually have independence. You've got money to do what you want to do, and so that's what you do. And then you think, oh, look back up. Maybe I should be saving a little bit here, you know. But that's a tough road though.
It is, and you know, everybody thinks about year in and year out some of those bigger ticket items that they need. There's always a proper time to make trades, like say equipment trades. We'll look at those for instance. There's always a time where that's going to fit best in your management scheme. It may not fit best in your financial scheme. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of all those good years and just like the last two that we've come off of and some of the other good years that I've seen in my career. And that's when folks tended to, you know, maybe looked at increasing some of their debt, whether that was intentional or not, by trading equipment and upgrading and taking advantage of some of that surplus of funds when it might have been a good idea to pay down some debt and just stay where you're at laterally with equipment trades.
Yeah. And I think, too, moving forward, if you've got the cash flow, if we're looking at 10% operating loans right now, if you can do it, I think you're going to be better off for sure if you can operate more on your cash flow than focusing on, okay, we have to use that loan. But again, that's going to compound the difficulty for that younger producer that, you know, hasn't built up that savings account that they can fall back on.
Right.
You know, one of the hopes I have when I think about the last 2 years, and I've seen folks do this a lot in those good years, is prepaid expenses, maybe taking advantage of prepaying some of those fertilizer or other input costs that they may have. this may be a really good year to have done that last fall, because even though you might not be able to control those expenses now, if you've already spent that money, it's certainly something you might not be able to rely on being able to do throughout the season with this year's income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, too, from a lot of the fertilizer chemical dealers I've talked to, prepay's way down, and I think a big reason for that is that you're not going to take your 10% operating loan and take your 5% discount. I mean, the math doesn't mm-hmm. check out there. And for that reason, we don't have as much prepay going on.
Right.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think that as far as the prepay and input costs and all that, that's kind of been variable, too. I know it's settled down. It has settled down. But, a couple of years ago when we had the whole supply chain issues and then, inputs through the roof, and you just don't forget that. And so sometimes it takes a little bit before you want to jump back in and prepay for something, because you're afraid, you're thinking, well, it's finally going down. Maybe it's going to go down a little bit more. And then just the, uncertainty of,
I think,
of what's going to happen.
I think week two, as we move forward, that's going to increase the volatility of market prices, because we don't have as much information on what are people going to plant this year. Because if we're not going to prepay anything, you've got more wiggle room there to say, okay, I'm going to switch this to beans, switch mm-hmm. this to corn. And so any projection that's going to come out is going to be probably a little bit weaker than what it's been in the past, because we don't have all this information out there of, Iowa's ordered X amount of beans from X and X company or X and X corn. Right. And so we're going to see that reflected, too, as we move through. I think it's going to be another year where we could definitely see USDA projections as they come out be off. And I think we saw that this year. A big reason for that is we didn't realize how resilient current hybrids are to weather. And so when we went through June and July, USDA looked at historically, okay, how bad could this be, and started cutting yields. And I don't think they were wrong to do that. I think everybody was looking at the weather and thinking, man, we're not going to have a crop this mm-hmm. year. We're going to have a yield decline. And so USDA went ahead and accounted for that. Well, it turns out they overaccounted. And so as we moved out of into harvest, I mean, we just keep adding bushels back. We added bushels back through January. And I think that's probably going to stop now, because we're about to the point where we've got a pretty good idea of how much crop's still out there. But that's really continued to push our prices down at a rapid pace, as they try to correct for just their overcorrection of yield in June and July.
And on the expenses, and like we were talking about, like you had mentioned, just looking at where we can trim back on expenses. And I've heard several times through this meeting season that we've been in is, this isn't going to be the year to spend a lot of money. This is probably not going to be that year. But there are expenses that you've got to have. I mean, if you're going to farm, you've got to. There's inputs that you've got to have. There's going to be repairs. There's going to be breakdowns. There's going to be things that can't be helped. I mean, it's going to happen. And how does a young farmer, try to manage that, or try to in their mind trying to figure out how they're going to make this work when there's a lot of uncertainty in the growing season that you just don't know about, that doesn't have anything to do with the market. It just farming.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's difficult. I mean, crop insurance is one way. If we're looking at weather's obviously going to be a risk, so turn into a crop insurance policy to make sure that you've at least locked in, your floor rate for, we know that we're going to at least make this much if something catastrophic would occur. From there, I think it's take a big look at, what are we spending on and where can we cut down. And if we look at some areas, I'm not going to say this fits every producer, but nitrogen application has a curve, and so as prices lower, it's maybe less profit, or it may be more profitable to cut those nitrogen rates a little bit and take a little bit lower yield just because the price is lower. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a trade-off on inputs itself, and so that's something that you may want to take a step back and say, okay, we're not going to put on X and X amount of nitrogen this year, we're going to lower it by 20 pounds, and it may not be a bad idea. Again, that doesn't fit every operation, but it's something to think about.
But that brings up a good point, though, Grant, because sometimes higher yields does not equal more profit, even yeah. Regardless of what you're getting per bushel. And but we base things on yield. And if we have a higher yield, then we think we automatically are making more money. That is not the case. And a lot of times it's not the case, actually.
Yeah.
When you start looking at what did it cost you
right.
to get that additional yield. And so at the end of the day...
That's exactly what I was fixing to say. I was actually going to say it after Grant got done, but it fits exactly after what you just said, Vicki. There's never a more important time for a producer to know their costs of production.
Yes.
Right now, with the volatility that's out there in prices, we've at least seen a little bit of downgrade in what our input costs have been based upon, you know, say 2 years ago. We're in better shape there, which should be a big, big help to folks. Mm-hmm. But you have to factor that in and know that that's going to be at least still a cost that you have to monitor. And knowing that cost of production and knowing what those extra bushels cost you to produce above and beyond your break-even yield is there's never been a more important time to know that than in a down cycle year.
Agreed. I think a big thing, too, if we're going to talk about cost of production, the biggest part's going to be land rent. And so if you're on rented ground, it may be time to take a look at, do we want to continue renting this ground, or can we have some discussions with the person we're renting from on maybe possibly discussing some lower land rent? Or I think in some cases it may be better to just let someone else rent it, especially if you're that young producer. Because I don't think if we're looking at $300 an acre, I just don't think that's going to cash flow this year. And if we're looking at the USDA projections for next year, I don't think it'll cash flow next year either. So if, you know, we don't have a large change in what's currently happening in the market. And so I think that's a big factor that you may have to take a step back and just say, you know, I don't want to let this ground go, but I also don't want to take a huge loss on it for the next 2 years.
Right. And, you know, when we go back to back a couple of years ago when fertilizer prices went through the roof. I mean, just crazy. I mean, potash and phosphorus. I mean, DAP, it was through the roof. And one of the things that we talked about during that, at that time with producers was looking at their current fertility and where they were, and then seeing where you could back off on a fertility, you know, on fertilizer application, but not hurt your yield, not put you in a place to where it would hurt you. And putting some plans together for ways to cut that fertilizer expense, but not enough to hurt the production. And I don't know that that's not another conversation that could be had with producers now, is that same conversation. It's just the reasons are different. Instead of the input prices being so high, it's because of the commodity prices being much lower. But that could still be a way to maybe trim some input expenses.
Yep.
Fertility is absolutely an agronomic topic, not necessarily an economic topic. But on those same hands, when we look at the past few years, we had those really, really high prices, and folks tended to maybe mine a little bit back out of the ground of what they had. Long term, I'm wondering what that line would look like for the folks who do a good job of just maintaining their fertility, adding in what that crop is going to take off in a year's time, and that's it. We can have a substantial amount of our resources tied up in what's in the soil, but we can also use those resources. We have to depend upon having those resources year in and year out. And it's I've just always wanted to see a line that says, this person who, you know, fertilized based on prices year in and year out, versus the guy who just maintained his soil fertility and tried to keep it right at where it needed to be, and just add in what the crop's going to take off.
That's an interesting question. I think I'll write that down. That may be something I'll work on.
There you go.
I mean, it would be interesting to see that. And I think before anybody makes any decision on cutting back on their fertility, they certainly need to get a soil test. See where we are. Take a good soil test. Let me throw that in there, too. Not just anything. You know, be diligent in taking that soil test correctly. And looking at those numbers before you make any decisions. But if any of our listeners are trying to pencil out plans right now to prepare for what's ahead, that might be something, that might be an area to look at. I didn't mean to jump off of Ag Econ and go to agronomy, but
it's a relevant thing in this time of the year. Three times today I got phone calls from different producers asking about fertilizing hay ground. Yeah. And three times I asked, when was your last soil test?
Yes.
But, you know, it's certainly a relative topic.
It is. And it plays into the whole, I mean, as far as the financial planning, the whole farm management, all of that, it all goes together. And that just popped in my mind, you know. But so from a crop insurance standpoint, by the time this airs, we know that signups have already been passed. I mean, we're recording before that date, but by the time this airs, that's going to be behind us. Just talk a little bit, though, about the importance of crop insurance. And I know, you know, we're sitting in limbo here with the farm bill. You know, we've got the extension, and we're just kind of in limbo, but that's a huge part of the farm bill is making sure that crop insurance section of that farm bill is...
From a producer standpoint, I would argue it's the most important part.
But talk a little bit about, you know, the crop insurance side of it. And
I think the first thing's going to be, well, you've got your commodity programs through the farm bill, so your ARC PLC decision. And most of the time, that's going to come out to ARC in corn and soybeans. I've got some questions on that recently as prices have continued to fall. Actually looked at the numbers again today, and still just the reference price on PLC is too low. And so we're still going to be looking at ARC for the most part. And I know it's going to be too late to make that decision when this airs. But I think that's going to be it for the foreseeable future unless we have catastrophic drops in crop prices. But knock on wood, I don't think we're going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to crop insurance, I mean, really the most popular plan out there is going to be a revenue insurance. But I think the big thing that's important to look at is a lot of the complaints I hear that, you know, the premium costs are just too high. We don't want to pay that much. But I think if you penciled it out and you went back to 2012, that 1 year would have paid your crop insurance premium probably up to about this date. And I'm not going to say that, you know, that's going to happen every year. But if you were well insured at that time, you basically covered your premium costs all the way up to 2024 just in what you gained at that time. And so if it would happen that we would have another year like 2012, you want to be on the winning side of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really, you know, you're looking at this for catastrophic loss. It may pick up the remainder, you know, if you've got some down areas in certain places. But that catastrophic loss is going to be the big thing that you're going to protect.
And we sure don't want low prices and low yield.
Yep.
That's a really, really bad situation. So from a crop insurance standpoint, what type of records, what type of things should the producers be keeping year in and year out in case there was to be a claim? Those types of things.
A lot of that's going to come back on, you know, what's your APH? And they're going to have some record of that at the FCF office if you're in FCS office if you're enrolling.
Mm-hmm.
But I think APH is really the big one. And so, you know, what are you expected to produce year over year?
Mm-hmm. Crop insurance is I like to learn about crop insurance, but man, there's a whole lot. There's any kind of insurance.
Yeah, and we're going to walk through some of that tomorrow on, okay, what does it mean when we pick different types of enrollment? What does it mean when we have to pick units? And so I will walk through, okay, well, you're going to take a enterprise unit compared to a basic unit. Honestly, to me, before I was in this role, I couldn't have told you the difference.
Right.
But one of them is a lot riskier than the other, and so you're going to have to pay a higher premium and have less protection with the other unit. There's trade-offs in there, so there are places where a basic unit makes more sense or where you need a basic unit. But I want to talk through that and give some education on, okay, what should we be thinking about when we make our crop insurance decision?
Mm-hmm. You know, talking about the meeting we're fixing to have, it reminds me of some of the old days when we had marketing classes and actually put on some marketing demonstrations and had folks come in and work through different scenarios. With all the different groups that are out right now offering that service, how valuable would it be for a producer to be marketing their own grain versus using a service? I see folks' time being, you know, spread farther and farther and thinner for them to be out and doing it. Are we in that stage in production today in America where folks need that professional who's out there ever watching it?
I think it definitely depends on the person. I mean, I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both, and it depends on also how much you trust that person who's marketing for you. I think that's going to be the biggest aspect. I mean, I know some really good people in the state of Kentucky, and if somebody asked me, would you feel comfortable with me going to this person, I'd say absolutely. There's some out there I don't know. But, I mean, I think the big thing that you gain from that is, one, you don't have to touch it, really. You just put your faith in someone else. So that's why, I mean, you have to have good faith in that person. They're going to do the good, responsible thing. But that being said, it frees up, as Jay said, all your time that you've put, your energy that you've put into that. And so that's going to be your advantage, and that you've got time to go focus on other things. On the opposite side, you know, if you're good at it and that's something you enjoy to do, I think you're probably losing a little bit, because that person who's marketing for you is also going to take a piece of that pie. And so there's trade-offs on both sides. And I think, again, it's not a bad decision if you think that's something that would be valuable for your operation, and it should definitely be thought about.
I think at the least, producers probably need to understand what goes into a marketing plan, whether they're letting somebody else take care of that for them or not. Just like you say, because somebody is taking a piece of that pie, you need to understand what margin of it you're willing to give up, and what you're getting for that margin, what you're getting for that price.
Yeah, and if there's any interest out there, I put together a 70-minute marketing plan presentation that I could give here if there's interest. Mm-hmm. Or honestly, anywhere in the state, just reach out to your county agent. I gave it in Owensboro last week, and I think it went over really well. It's pretty simple, but it's something that it gives you something to follow when you're thinking about marketing, because I think the big thing is that 8 out of 10 years, you're going to have the highest prices at some point between February and June. And so that's really, you've got to have pre-harvest marketing is going to be the most important part, especially if you don't have storage and you're going to deliver at harvest.
Okay, that's exactly what I was fixing to ask. If folks, say we wanted to put on a seminar like that, when would be the best time of the year for folks to be looking at learning these marketing strategies?
Best time of year to be learning it? I mean, I think you want to have a plan together in late December. For sure. Mm-hmm. But typically we're going to see those highest prices actually come on May 15th in soybeans and corn. Statistically, you get the highest price year over year, May 15th. That being said, depending on what's happening, pretty confidently, at least, like I said, 80% of the time, you can say that highest price is going to fall sometime between February and June.
Mm-hmm. Is there, if say someone is interested in doing some forward contracting?
Yep.
Pricing their grain out into the future, is there a percentage of that crop that you feel comfortable that they should be playing with versus what they should lock in at a certain price? Or the old adage years ago was 50%. You know, you go ahead and price 50% of your crop out there. If you've got ample storage and a way to keep the grain quality up, then maybe have that other 50% to look at market rises.
Yep, and that's going to be highly dependent on risk preference. And so how much, you know, there's a lot of production risk out there too, and especially if you're using a forward contract, you know, you don't want to take those heavy penalties from the elevator if you don't have that production. That being said, that puts the importance back on crop insurance of you've got a little bit of cover there if you do market more. And so typically what I would point towards is more towards that 75% mark, and I wouldn't say that all has to be marketed by, you know, very early in February, March, but probably by July 4th, when you can at least see you've got some crops out of the ground, you've got a better idea of yield. I think 75% by July 4th is a good target to shoot for.
And do you think, in the current situation that we're in and going into, and what it looks like it's going to be, you know, some people may look at that and be like, I don't know if I need to you know, lock in more or back up and do less. You know, it's that tug of war type of thing, because I think when it's a lower price, I think sometimes we tend to see more people wanting to hold on to it. They just hoping it goes up just a little bit than when it's, I mean, obviously when it's higher, everybody wants it to go higher, but when you've got a really strong price, you're more apt to sometimes to do that. I mean, are you seeing that, or is it the opposite? Do more people want to lock in because they're afraid it's going to go low?
No, for sure. I mean, I did a meeting a a couple weeks ago and was back in the same area last week. And one of the guys said, man, you said that soybeans look like a good time to sell currently. And we were like, no, we're going to wait. And then it's fallen $1.30 since then. And they came up to me in the meeting and said, we probably should have sold some beans when you mentioned it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think we're on that downward trajectory and people wanted to come back up. I mean, I wanted to come back up too. I think the best thing you can do is spread it out. And so divide whatever your production is by 1,000, 5,000 bushels. It depends on your farm size. A contract or many contracts, normally 1,000, and a normal contract's 5,000, and spread that out throughout these months until you've got 75% of that marketed by July 4th. And then after that, you may have a little bit of rise in the market at harvest, but you've got that leftover 25% to hit that. And the big thing we're going to focus on is what's our average price through all this. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully if we're in a year that would be more typical, we're going to watch that price rise and then decrease swiftly at harvest. There's only been 2 years out of the past 10 when I put that data together for that presentation that we've seen prices increase at harvest, but the height of the increase is normally about half of what a decrease would be. Mm. And so if you average that out across the 10 years, I think it came out to like marketing on the same marketing plan year over year, the same one I just mentioned, would lead to about, on the soybean side, it was almost $1.15 per bushel in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think too, on a marketing side, or, you know, it used to be this way, 'cause I was back when I was in my, when I was a crop consultant, you know, I was more on the farms a lot more than I am now, particularly. But sometimes some marketing plans, though, are when you was going to sell the grain, when he's going to deliver it. That was kind of based on when you had payments due. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you, you know, if you knew that if you'd bought a farm, if you got a farm payment due, or you've got, you know, an equipment, you know, payment due, then in that marketing plan, a lot, some of that was in there on, so you knew that you had grain to sell ahead of when you had to make that payment.
Yep.
And I'm certain that that's still part of a marketing plan somewhere in there.
No, and it should be. I mean, if you're making a marketing plan, it's got to take into account every detail of your operation. And so if you know you've got a bill come due, you know, depending on what prices are at, we just want to lock that price in as high as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, a lot of those are annual payments. So it's not like you're paying a car payment like we're used to paying. It's a pretty hefty payment.
Well, and this whole conversation for most producers is dependent upon how much storage they have on the farm. There's areas, you know, like in the southern part of the Pennyrail where David and I live, where we both used to work, grain storage is everywhere you look. There's lots of on-farm grain storage. They've determined through the years the value of grain storage as a harvest aid, so you're not sitting in those long lines at the elevator. But on the same hand, that gives you the direct ability to be able to forward contract and price grain out for delivery at a different date. And that's beneficial all the way around. I know when we get to thinking about basis and its relationship with our grain prices for local delivery, that certainly plays a lot into that, too, on how far we're having to haul and where we're having to haul it, too.
Yep, and just the ability to roll your hedge and collect on futures carry, I think, is huge. And so if I looked at I think I saw an article that said this year in Kentucky it was close to 15 cents per bushel that you could gain just by rolling a futures hedge and storing grain. And so that's, you know, if you bring that out to however large your storage is, that's a big gain there in 15 cents.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be an even bigger gain looking forward as we are in those lower commodity prices, and that extra 15 cents is going to mean more.
Yeah.
Big reminder to folks that are doing that is to pay attention to grain quality. Grain needs to be coming out of the bin just in the same or shape that it went in, and that's often hard to do. It never improves. It only goes down.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, your starting point is how well it is when it goes in there.
You don't just need storage. You need a good dryer, and you got to pay close attention to grain quality.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah, and stay on top of it and make sure that's part of your priority list is to keep that grain in good shape.
Getting towards the end, but what are some other things you'd like producers to know as they get ready to go out through this next growing season?
What What about wheat? What does it look like?
Sure.
I mean, I know in this particular area we don't have as much wheat, but you get down where David and Jay live, you have a lot more wheat in that area. I mean, are we seeing the same trend with commodity prices with wheat, or are they?
We are. I think the big thing with wheat is it's just so volatile at the moment. Wheat's a world crop. And so anything that's happening in Russia, Ukraine, or elsewhere has a large impact on what happens with that wheat price. I think overall the markets have become more used to that conflict, and so we're not seeing the huge price swings we were seeing a year or even especially 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we're still seeing a lot of speculation of, you know, what happens if that conflict increases. If it does, I mean, we're going to see that price shoot up again.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that happens or not, I can't tell you. I don't want to speculate on geopolitics, mm-hmm. and I don't know what the U.S., Russia, or
sure.
anyone else in this world is going to do. And so that makes wheat a lot more difficult to market.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, if we're looking down in southern Kentucky or around that Hopkinsville area, you know, there's a lot of premium you could gain by storing wheat in that area, and that's something that's really rare. As I started to look around, there's not very many places where you see grain or wheat especially stored past harvest delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of an opportunity for Kentucky as a state to look at and say, we have all this opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's capture that market carry premium on the wheat side.
There's a few on-farm storage facilities that I can think of, individual producers who actually contract with some of the in-run processors there
yep.
to store wheat just for them. It's almost like you've bought it, you've paid for it, but I'm going to hold on to it and bring it to you when you need it.
Yep.
And other than that, I think you're right. Wheat has traditionally been one of those crops that's gone straight to the market. And here, when we – this part of Kentucky, when we think about crop rotations, we think about corn, soybeans. In that part of the state, it's corn, soybeans, and wheat. More double crop beans than there are full season beans. We get outside of our part of Kentucky. You were talking earlier about folks looking at, you know, right to the very end about whether we're going to do corn, whether we're going to do beans, and maybe changing some of those earlier made decisions. We get outside of this part of Kentucky into West Tennessee and Arkansas and Missouri. Those folks have rice and cotton to play with as well, which have been, I guess, maybe the only parts of those markets that have been trending a little more upward.
Yep, they have been. I was at a Outlook in Atlanta here a couple weeks ago, and the cotton Outlook, the guy was kind of joking, but he said, you know what, my advice is don't plant cotton. So we'll see what happens there. But
yeah.
Well, on the same hand, you don't want to glut the market with a lot of extra production. And thankfully, with cotton and rice, there's only certain parts of the country that they can be raising those anyway. But that part of Arkansas, southeast Missouri, down into Texas and Louisiana, and that's about it. Well, West Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Well, I think, you know, I know we're about to wind up here, but I think it's from the discussions today, from the discussions that we've been having over the last few months, and I think it's just a reminder to us that year in and year out, it is very important to be prepared. It's very important to, like you said, reiterate what Jay said, know your cost of production, know what you got to have, know what you don't have to have, And a lot of that comes down to knowing your farms and knowing, you know, what to expect. Because sometimes some things pop out that are unexpected. That's going to happen. That's going to happen because we can't control weather. We can't control things, what diseases are going to come in or not come in. Those are out of our control, certainly. But we can be as prepared as what we can possibly be, and that's important year in and year out, but I think in times like this it becomes really important.
Absolutely, and I think it's a good time to push right on into our timely tip. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, and we all agreed with the current uncertainties in the market, it's a good time to keep an eye on variable costs and focus on the expenses that we can control. As you put it, Vicki, know what you got to have, know what you can do without.
Yeah.
And kind of use that as a guiding tool to get through this year. Hopefully this is not something we have to go through for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. typically when we have cycles in the grain market, we'll have those highs and we'll have those lows. And thankfully, the lows don't always just persist from year in and year out. So.
Yeah, and I think ending on a positive note, one thing that we do have, at least moving forward, is we've got a lot of push for expanded biodiesel in the United States. Expanded, a big topic in Congress at the moment, is the sustainable aviation fuel. And so that would expand ethanol. And as we have more of this capacity come online, I think in 2 years, that's a big opportunity where you could see these prices rebound.
Hey, well, you know, on that note, what other demands are there out there that we see that might be a positive for the grain markets? Specifically, I'm thinking of a report that just came out that said we have our lowest number of cattle on feed since 1972. We know cattle inventories are down, and we know they're fixing to start moving their way back up. What are some of the other demands that we think might be out there that would be a plus for our crop prices? I know the ethanol is a big, big one. It's something that's helped a lot through the years. I know there's been a lot of attacks on it that have tried to take it away. The aviation fuel, I feel like, is probably one of the biggest shots in the arm that we've had in a long time.
Yeah, it is, and it's something to be excited about and something that we hopefully see come online pretty, pretty quickly.
Sounds good. We always have a need for our crops, and we can create needs when we need to. So. Sounds great. Well, Grant, we appreciate you being here with us. We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.